why it's already live and I'm talking stuff. How are you?
You just laughed like a drunk old lady.
I do. I didn't realize we were live. You need to give me live, more. Like, girl. Just wake me up and say, Carla, we're live.
Carla, you
anyway,
are live.
I am so alive. Mm-hmm. Welcome to another episode of Market Overdrive. I am your host, residential real estate broker with Coble Banker. There is a weird light going in here. Do you see the shadows, DZ? Does it matter? No? Because we're not here to talk about lighting or production. We're here to talk about real estate. With me, as always, every Thursday, believe it or not, he makes it out of his cave to come out and hang out with us, my co-host, Nick Mehmeti.
I feel like I'm trapped in life and I have to be here every Thursday with you.
Trapped in life? What are you talking about? You have decisions. Life is all about decisions. And I think our
And I don't know how I made this decision to be by you every Thursday, but I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to stick with it.
Stick with it.
All right.
With us as well, Mr. Mo. How are you, Mr.
I'm
Mo?
Good. Twice a month, not
twice
every
a month,
week.
Every week, right? You kind of saw that. See, like, every week?
He's half as crazy as I am.
Half as crazy.
He's only half as crazy.
Half as lucky. Half.
Oh, thank you, Mo. See, and that's why he is marriage material. You, of course, questionable.
He's if the I one had getting feelings, married soon.
Yeah, I'm the one getting married. How come you're not getting married?
Oh,
is
no, your, don't say
is
that.
Is she watching
oh,
the show?
Starting that
oh,
on the show.
When are you going to get married, Mo?
I was just telling the story. My aunt speaks like chopped up couple words of English. The other day, we're sitting around a dinner table with my dad, and she says in English, Mo, with my girlfriend around, Mo, you're stupid. Why you no propose? Just like that. And I'm like, you could have said that in Farsi. You didn't have to say that in English.
Your aunt speaks better English than my aunt. Yeah. My aunt says, Maddie, when?
And I was like, shh. Soon enough.
Speaking of choices, women, we also have choices. And with us today, it is Ms. Lindsay. How are you, Lindsay?
I am doing
Lindsay
so well.
Lindsay has her last name.
Schendel.
Okay, well, can we say her whole name, Carla?
Why don't you say it?
Lindsay Schendel.
That's great. Some people say Chanel, which works too.
Oh, I like
totally
that.
Posh, I like that.
Version. Yeah. Thank you for having me. Honestly, it's
thanks,
cool.
Thanks.
Of course, it's great having you on the show.
It is, but before we get started, we have heard Mo's resume over and over again. Carla won't stop repeating hers to me, and of course, I've recited mine to everyone's poor ears. We need to know what your qualifications are, how long you've been doing this, and the whole nine yards. Tell us a little about Lindsay.
All right. So I also work at Main Street Real Estate Group with Mr. Mo over here.
Bonus.
It is. I've been in the business for 5.5 years, and I love every second of it.
What got you in the business real quick?
I was modeling and bartending, and I really wanted to use my brain. So
I have no idea what that would be like.
Yeah, weird.
Never poured a drink in my life.
You modeled too, right?
Aha, I said
you
never
did.
Poured a drink
See,
in
he was
my
waiting
life.
For me to say that. He was waiting for somebody to mention that.
That was 20 years, 20
too.
Pounds ago, buddy. But anyways, go ahead.
Ditto. So yeah, just kind of fell into it, got some good mentorship, and you know, off to the races, selling some real estate, and it's pretty cool.
Having
it's my passion.
You started 5 years ago, so you started. Well, the market was already kind of recovering to
it
some
was,
degree, so it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
I always get really impressed when someone said they got started in 08 or 09. I'm like, wow.
I started in 09.
That's awesome, dude. Like, think about it. You started at the absolute worst possible time to get into that industry. 08, 09 were probably the peak of the madness.
Wasn't really by choice, though.
Yeah.
So I just kind of couldn't make enough money as a attorney when I got out of law school and got a real estate broker's license to help. So,
it was either be a realtor or Valet Park. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, I get you.
And if anybody's seen me drive cars, nobody wants
go
me driving
a
their
realtor.
Cars. No.
Well, speaking of getting started, the whole show today is about getting started to become a homeowner. Obviously, if you're a renter and you've been renting the whole time in 2017, it's time to actually get started in your biggest investment and probably your most reliable investment over the rest of your life. So who wants to kick off the fun stuff? You, or should we have our guests, or who wants to get into, you know, starting?
Whatever you want. It's all about choices, what as I said earlier. So I want Lindsay to go ahead and give us, because you did make a choice to come into the business from, you know, modeling to becoming a realtor. And, you know, what part of the real estate business is what fascinates you the most?
Honestly, I think it's the flexibility. I at the beginning I thought, oh, you know what, make my own schedule, until you suddenly realize it's, you know, you're
you
at your beck
more.
And call of the client, and
right.
you know, you're filling in their schedules. But honestly, it's really, really rewarding to help somebody go from renting and then kind of get them into the first huge major purchase of their life and, you know, put smiles on their faces. And it kind of seals the deal of why I do what I do and makes me feel very fulfilled.
Love it. So a lot of people are considering real estate as a career. We're not going to get into that as well here. But I want to applaud you for joining Mo. He's great leadership. And of course, you know, again, a great choice for your career path. But today it's about our listeners who may or may not be considering buying real estate in this fourth quarter market. And of course, next year, what would you say to someone that's on the sidelines about buying?
Immediately get a pre-approval. I think that sets the tone for the first steps. You need to know what you can afford. And just go with that. Go with, lead with the money, honestly, because that's only going to set you up for.
You just took my line.
Sorry.
I was supposed to say that one. That's okay, though.
Lead with the money.
I agree with you. As a mortgage lender, I'll stick with that one. I agree with her. Get a pre-approval first.
I agree 100%. Because what happens a lot of times is you, I see this all the time with business owners. So a business owner is like, hey, I make X amount of money, but they write off a lot of stuff. So you're approved to buy a certain amount of home that your lender tells you you're approved to buy. You don't, and it's tough for us realtors to take somebody out to look at, let's say, a $400,000 home. Then the pre-approval comes back out at $300,000 or $250,000, and then you got to back that stuff out of your mind, all the stuff that you saw. So, and sometimes vice versa. You think you're approved for a $250,000 home, and an extra $50,000 is what?
It's not. $200 on your $230.
Yeah, a month can buy you something so much nicer. So I agree. Pre-approved first.
Now let's just go. I mean, today with technology, in the old days, you absolutely needed to call a lender first because, you know, most people didn't even have access to a mortgage interest calculator. You know, it was like kind of a process. What else goes into my payment that I'm not thinking of? Today, everyone's got access to a computer, and you can get a mortgage calculator on almost any website that sells homes or shows homes or whatever the case is. So I think a lot of people have a good idea to gauge payment before they even contact us. My advice to people is, if you can, and you probably should be able to do that without even talking to a loan officer, is to kind of figure out your punch list. You can't live everywhere, so you can't put a realtor in a goose egg hunt. By giving them 18 different areas, you know, and all sorts of different options to pick from. It's like you got to kind of pin it. Okay, I think I like the payment of something at $300,000. Sure, your loan officer might surprise you a little bit and say, hey, you forgot mortgage insurance. Hey, you got to take this into consideration. Hey, the rate you did your payment on is way below the market rate. So those little surprises will turn your payment a little bit.
Look at that. We're helping out the lender.
And the lender's helping out you guys.
He's helping us out.
But before you go shop, you need to know what you're shopping for.
Right.
Nobody gets in a car and says, I'm just going to go shopping for food. You kind of go there with the direction, I'm out of milk, I'm out of this, I need this, I need that, right? And I think a lot of, I've seen some people that I've talked to for the first time where I'm like, oh God, I'm the first one to talk to you. I wish they actually started with a realtor a little bit.
Sure.
Right.
You know, because like they're rambling all over. I want a 4-car garage. I want a 2-car garage. No, that's okay. But what's more important is I need a basement finish. And you're like, okay.
But that's kind of the fun part, too. I mean, for a first-time homebuyer, I honestly don't mind because I'd rather show them everything versus what they thought they kind of wanted to stick with. Because, you know, at least in Chicago, you have all different types of properties, be it a mid-rise, high-rise, single-family home, 3-flat. I mean, they all come with different types of – you got your HOA fees, which – you know, you want to live in the Gold Coast, you could be looking at anywhere from $800 to $1,000 in HOA fees. And
right.
That alone could be a mortgage payment. And a
right.
lot of people don't factor that into it. So I think it's really important to show them everything.
Yeah. What I like is that typically from my experience, people already know what they can afford. Or what they. The most important thing for us is what do you feel comfortable paying every month, realistically?
Sure.
I mean, everybody will say, I feel comfortable paying $200 a month. You're not going to live anywhere with that. But, you know, they usually know that if this doesn't bend them too hard, that's more times than none an automatic pre-approval because we're far more giving in the qualification arena than someone and what they really would prefer to spend. So if I tell a client, you know, that makes, let's say, $12,000 a month, hey, you easily are approved for a $4,000 a month total mortgage payment. I've heard it many a times from that same person saying, oh, no, absolutely not. I don't want a $4,000 anything payment. Great. That just makes this pre-approval much easier. So I think it's important for people that if they do want to stay within a $2,000, $3,000, whatever that number is, to kind of get an appetite of these are $400,000 properties, these are $450,000 properties, not in this area, but this area, and then go ahead and attack a realtor because there's a lot of work after that.
Right. So I love what you're saying. Both of you are you know, touching on some very important key points. And I think when it comes to the process and the timeline for when someone's buying, you are going to look at pricing as well as location. And I love the fact that, you know, you're like, I'll show them whatever, you know, what's the, all the options, right, to make sure that they find the key I don't know, process or whatever property that they're looking for. So why don't we go back to that location? I know Nick said location should be like the first thing that people should really consider, because I recently had somebody call me. They found my name on Zillow and they said, hey, I'm from Texas and I'm coming to Chicago and I want you to help me find a 2-bedroom, 1-bath condo. And I was like, sure, definitely. Where would you like to go? And they're like, Chicago. I was like, wait, what neighborhood in Chicago? Well, I love sports. And I'm like, okay, we can show you United Center. We can show you Wrigleyville. Like, what would you like?
Totally different prices.
Right.
Totally different prices.
And I'm like, and before I even get into pricing, right?
Comiskey Park.
Right? I didn't even do that.
It's a whole other price.
I'm like, Bridgeport.
It's getting expensive.
Yeah, it's getting expensive.
But it's not like being in Wrigley.
Oh, yeah. Definitely not like being in Wrigley.
Right. So location, right? I think it's a matter. So when you're looking to start your process, yes, please narrow down the location that you like. And of course, from that, we'll identify pricing. But your first step, I think, for sure, should be location. And then we move into, like, the inventory type, like you said, Lindsay, right? There's so many options, like condos, homes, 2 flats. What are you finding that it's the most coveted type of inventory or product that people are looking for in the market in this time?
I guess it does beg the question, well, what area? Because, you know, you could certainly want a single family home, but you're not necessarily going to find that in River North.
Right.
You know, you're going to probably get a high rise there with a higher HOA fee. So, you know, inventory is pretty low right now as yeah. well. So you kind of take what you can get in the area that you're looking. But typically my clients are still trying to find that diamond in the rough where they're not paying a ton of money for something. So I would say a 2-bedroom, 2-bath condo is usually something that's achievable.
Kind of like your startup point yes. for most buyers these days, 2-bedroom, 2-bath condo. That does make sense. And it does take us back to, like, the pricing, right? How do we help them identify what they want at the right price? So you are finding that people are still looking for that shiny penny and to lowball and submit lowball offers. I mean, you're also a transacting attorney, Mo. So what are you saying to your buyers when they come to you and you're like, well, it's fourth quarter, so technically market's supposed to be softened. What do you recommend that we do with the list price, sales price ratios?
So I tell everybody a list price could be too high in the summer. It could be too high in the spring. It could be low in the winter. Anytime I have a client that wants a property and they've seen it and they really like it, I tell them I'm going to do a CMA on it, a market analysis, and let them know exactly what I think that property should sell for. And then we can frame our offer. So somebody could be right on the dollar point with a list price and somebody could be way off. And the only way to really know that is to do a market analysis. Now, I get this question all the time. I'll go out and my clients will ask me, hey, what do you think this place is worth? Well, I don't know in that given moment the exact number and I don't want to be far off. So I tell people, whichever homes you like, I'll go home tonight. I'll do a CMA for you and I'll send you the CMA and we'll figure out exactly what that place should sell for, because people are going to list high in the winter, they're going to list high in the summer, and some people are always going to list right. So
great answer. I completely agree.
I've done 2 shopping for personal properties, 1 single family in the suburbs, 1 condo years ago here around the corner, actually, or in this area. And at the end, I realized, and you'd think somebody with a lot of experience in real estate, this should be pretty simple for me, right? But it wasn't. It was actually a nightmare, because I was one of those people that I guess I would dread if I was a realtor, where I wanted everything. Maybe because even when you think you can afford whatever you want, you still can't find everything, because sometimes the buildings don't exist or the property just doesn't exist that way or whatever. And I found myself burning a lot of time. At the end, when I did the condo experience back in 2009, I realized that my number one priority was actually view. Where I wanted the view, the 3rd bedroom, the pool outside, the amenity to have a big gym. I mean, I did everything. So I could never find this one building, because not one building didn't have all of them, right? And then finally I had to make a decision, this one or that one or this one. And it was like, well, the killer view is here. And at the end of the day, that's what I really, really wanted. It's something that had just a nice scenery and a balcony. This was my end-all decision when I picked it. Same thing with my house. I needed this, that. And then I realized at the end, when I finally made a decision, it was like location was actually the suburb that I really wanted to be in was this one. And land. I needed to have some land. Those were my number one priorities. And I think too many people don't, or find themselves standing still because they can't find all of it. Instead of admitting that you're not going to find all of it, you have to just be happy with, you know, within reason, obviously, but make what's your priority in doing this transaction?
Yeah. I mean, you need to identify the priorities so that I think the realtor comes into play to set expectations up front. Maybe what you're looking for is not achievable in the market area that you would ideally like to live in. So it kind of comes into play for someone to step in and say, hey, you know, unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen, but you did mention on the first time we spoke that a view is important. So,
or a school district, which probably is number one at the very top of those lists. But people will then start to forget it's the school district. Look, so they'll go to the neighboring town because this house is slightly bigger and has all those other bells and whistles they're looking for, but they've fallen out of the school district, which is why they started this whole process, right?
And some things are changeable. So location is not. No, you're not going to move your house to a different location. Lot size is not really changeable unless you knock your neighbor's house down, which some people do. Balcony, you can't really add it to a lot of buildings. Nope. But if your kitchen isn't open, sometimes you can fix that. And I tell people that if your wish list is I want dark floors and the floors aren't dark, well, sanding and restanding them is $2 a square foot. So you got to pick priorities that you can change, and then anything that you can change has to be something you can give on if your price point is one in which you can't have everything. So
yeah,
like you guys have both said, there's some big ticket stuff that you just can't change and you got to know those priorities and keep track of them. But some stuff you just, it's tough too. You know, a first time home buyer goes to a handful of homes and sometimes doesn't know what to expect. They've rented a couple times and renters know that in a year they get to move out again. So it's right. not like they're married to the place, but they go see 4, 5, 6 places. And a lot of times they think, well, if I had the kitchen of the first place and the bathroom of the second place and the location of the third, that'd be perfect. It's a matter of kind of bunching as many of those wants as you can into one place.
Right.
And that's typically the home for you.
But I challenge that comment. That's the reason why we're having this show today is renters know that in a year they could just walk away and go wherever they want and blah, blah, blah. And they sell themselves on that piece of freedom. However, who says you can't rent your property if you really want to move out?
You could.
You could.
You could.
So there goes that. At least you're getting something back in return.
My rule of thumb is if you see yourself staying put in an area for at least 3 years, it makes more sense to buy rather than rent. And I'll let Lindsay explain some of the benefits of home ownership. But if you're going to see yourself staying put at least 3 years, or you keep the property, like you said, and rent it out, mm-hmm. then it makes sense. Property values go up 3-4% every year historically. And when you come to sell a home, you have 5%-6% brokerage fees. You have some closing costs. So let's say 7-8% of cost to sell. You'll make that up in 3 years, so you're not selling at a loss. At minimum, you'll make that up in a couple of years. So I tell people, if you can see yourself staying put for 3 years, there's a long list of benefits that come with being a homeowner. And I'll let you kind of explain a couple of those.
Well, I was going to touch on maybe the tax benefits, but that's kind of up in the air these days.
It is.
Yeah. So
a little bit.
Just, you know.
As of right now, it's still normal.
Right. So there are definite tax benefits. You get a homeowner's exemption, which can be, you know, something to look forward to. You build equity, which as a renter, you have nothing. I mean, you're literally giving your whatever it might be, $1,000, $2,000 every month to someone else. And why not be able to invest in yourself essentially by buying a home?
So there's no renter's exemption?
There's not.
I don't get any tax breaks for paying rent?
Maybe you could write off some square footage.
If I was president,
for an office,
which I'd let you write off your rent. But you're lucky I'm not. But you, one other thing in there, all those are very true. And mortgage interest and all that is a write-off. Property taxes, it helps you on your tax return. In the United States of America, we are the worst savers in the world. We don't know how to save a dollar for the most part. Like if we have a buck, we find a way to spend at least 99 cents immediately. So the one beautiful part about our real estate market, all of our real estate, our entire real estate economy, is that it's legitimately a good forced savings account. You know, we have to pay our bills. We have to pay for where we sleep somewhere. Whether you're renting or you own it, you're paying for it, right? Nobody's sleeping for free unless you're living with your parents. And at the end of the day, you might as well have something coming back for you at the end of 20 years of paying, which could be a few hundred thousand dollars in equity. In some cases, it could be millions of dollars in equity, depending on where you bought and how you roll those dice when you were purchasing. Where renters living freely, 20 years later, turn around and there's absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
So you're forced to save when it comes to real estate. That's the nice part about it. You're literally, you don't have a 401k, you don't put away anything in your savings account. At least this thing is growing somewhere somehow.
More billionaires have been made from real estate than any other one.
You said
thing.
That on another show, and I actually held on to that one for a while.
It's the most common factor among billionaires, not even millionaires, among billionaires, is their real estate investments is the big factor.
The real estate portfolio, and a lot of people may argue that, you know, what about when the market crashes and then values go back to, you know, decreasing? But you've seen in some of our neighborhoods, right, where the values have in fact, increased and tripled, and a lot of buyers are saying, darn it, I wish I would have bought back then, because now I can't tap into that zip code because it's over my price point. I think we're talking about over time and encouraging renters from, you know, get off the sidelines, invest in real estate, because it seems to be the most legitimate, something tangible. You know, it's a commodity that you can touch and you can say, and you can actually use and live in it, and then watch it grow and have appreciation over time.
And back in the day, it was really hard to become a homeowner because of a couple of things. One, you had to have incredible credit. Two, you had to put a lot of money down. Mm-hmm. You had to put 20% down was the norm.
Talking the 80s?
Yeah, 80s, even 90s maybe. But now, when you can put 5% down or 3.5% down with FHA, you can get a 2.5-3% credit back at closing. I've had a lot of renters that turn into home buyers.
You got a check back.
End up buying with so little down or nothing down that if they were a renter, they would have paid a first month's mortgage or first month's rent, security deposit, and a second month's rent, because mortgages are paid in arrears. Sure. So you basically skip a month. So a lot of times now, you can put somebody in a home for less out-of-pocket expense than it costs for them to be a renter. So you can have lower credit scores, really, to become a homeowner. Say 580 for FHA, 620-ish for conventional, in that ballpark. Nobody is leasing to you in the city of Chicago with a 580 credit score unless you have a cosigner, because the laws are too favorable to the tenants, and landlords just won't do it.
Oh.
So
it's crazy.
They're looking for 700s. It's harder to rent in certain parts of the city than it is to buy it.
I think all. No, nobody.
Well, there's some parts of the city that they'll be a little bit more flexible. But if you're talking about the prime locations and a prime unit and great views, for example, whatever it is, they're gonna pull the 750 credit score out of there, and they're gonna pull somebody that has a debt to income ratio that is way below qualification ratios to buy it. So, for example, someone that wants to pick up a $4,000 rent, they're going to take the guy that makes $700,000 a year over the guy that makes $180,000 a year, even though they both can easily afford it, right?
Yeah.
Renting
but now,
is ridiculous.
You're thinking, you're like, did I just get beat out? I make a ton of money at $180,000. I could easily pay for this. I just got beat out by somebody? Yeah, because of
the competition,
no logic.
Is fierce too.
Not in buying a property, though.
No,
your fight is just as good if you got a 620 going against somebody with 720. It's who wants to pay what for the price,
and the seller doesn't get to see that as long as you have a pre-approval,
and usually doesn't even care as long as he's got a good pre-approval.
Right,
gentlemen, we have Jim who made a comment on Facebook. Thank you so much for watching and hanging out with us live on Facebook. We're also on YouTube, so if you want to stream us live there as well, you're more than welcome to do so. Jim said, Mo did exactly that for us. Comprehensive CMA, competitive market analysis, on a property we almost bought a few years ago to let us know whether it was listed fairly or not.
I didn't pay Jim to tune in. Thanks, Jim.
I pay a lot of people to tune in. So you
How
guys-
about Andy? Go up further. Andy says, can we see that cute Persian guy?
He's dreamy.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Andy.
I wanted to get more into the business aspect of it, but okay, we love you, Don.
Hey, Andy, get
we
your
see
own
you
boo.
Love yourself more.
Don't be zooming in on my Persian romance.
Nick is getting jealous a little bit. But going back to that, right, a lot of buyers think that, you know, what if we overpay because it's a competitive market, there is multiple bidding wars. What happens if we overpay on a product? What do you say to that, Lindsay?
Well, I mean, you see that a lot, actually, especially when it starts heating up after, I would say, like Super Bowl weekend. Spring market kind of kicks off a bit early, and sellers are very motivated at that point to put their property up. And then you see this huge influx of buyers that are really excited as well. And you're walking in, and all of a sudden, what you thought was the perfect house for you, all of a sudden, you know, four other people think the same thing. So you're getting into this multiple offer situation, and it's kind of at that point, like, how do you set yourself apart from that other offer? And you know, we've seen escalation clauses and things like that, but you almost have to start going above and beyond and thinking of different strategies to get that offer accepted at that point, because everyone's doing an escalation clause. And I mean, people remove contingencies all day, like not having to sell your house to buy another one. But what about the appraisal factor? Because that comes into play when you're talking about, you know, is this worth what I'm, you know, going to pay for it, because I just want the house, but so do four other people. It's kind of scary. It's kind of
completely
worrisome.
Completely agree. And that should, you know, like a lot of people are fearsome of the fact that, well, you know, you're just being very aggressive and you're letting me know that I need to make that, you know, write that escalation clause. At what point do we put a ceiling on that? You know, what point do I say I'm not comfortable overpaying for this property? And it may be conceived as overpaying for something, but in real estate, there's a lot of checks and balances. You said appraisal, right? We've seen a lot of appraisals where the appraisals come in lower than what you offer. And at that point, the offers get adjusted. And
Carla's,
you're an attorney.
Carla's grinning at me because she a few weeks ago got a deal for one of her clients.
Oh, you want to go there?
They reduced,
you
want to
start
the price
fighting?
$30,000. No, I'm impressed. It was
impressed.
Very impressive. And it was like 15%.
Do you want to tell everybody how you like you had a bet going on between the attorneys and the lenders about how I was not going to be able to get this deal done, or what was that all about? I heard about that post closing.
So you heard an exaggerated version of that,
okay,
by somebody. Javier, that said we were doubting you. We said it was unlikely that the seller was going to agree after you had already got him down 10% to a $10,000 credit too, but somehow Carla got it done. It was, we all were doubtful.
Carla gets it done. See?
Oh, wow. I'm hearing
that's
it.
For me.
You hear that? It's a nitro.
You
hear
that? At the race.
It's nitro time.
That gets me excited every time.
It's nitro
a
time.
Car.
You do. I see you like twitching, like getting ready to. You
know. How does he twitch, Nick?
Twitching.
You know all
little,
of his moves.
Little Persian popping. Yes. Persian popping. So, the nitro question. Obviously, you are the guest today,
twitch.
Lindsay. So, we're going to have to ask you. I got my Rain Man twitch. We're going to have to ask you a nitro question. You don't have to answer right away, but we're going to give you about 10 or 15 minutes, and we're going to come back to it probably just before the show's over here.
Ooh, Lindsay, I'm excited for you.
In the spirit of the topic being, for the most part, I would like to think that most people watching a show like this and why they should finally own a property are first-time homebuyers, right? So, ignorance is bliss. You can't blame people that don't know things for doing things that they're just not aware are bad or good or whatever, right? With that being said, we want you to tell us what is the one thing that absolutely has you shriek when a client does it so they can avoid it going in.
Shriek.
What yeah, like shriek. Mean? Like you're just like, like that you could just do away with. If you've never heard this again, it couldn't be soon enough. Like that one thing that bothers you the most, the one thing that they do so that our listeners that are planning on buying will make sure to try and avoid doing that.
That's
to an agent.
That's a tough nitro question.
I wasn't like even focused on the question as much as your weird faces day. Is this like weird Twitch day, Nick?
There's some artificial brown on your skin today. So I don't even know what that color. That doesn't look like a tan from like a vacation or a tanning booth. What you got going on is a whole other story. So back to what I said.
Oh, God.
If you could do away with it, so our listeners can make sure they don't do this to their next agent and put them through what we would consider work hell.
Oh, God.
What is that one thing that you would tell that you can't stand when people do to you?
You want that now?
No, you can wait. We'll come back to you in 10 minutes. All right? You can mull that one over. All right.
Let's go back to my
back
fight
to you and
about
your brown
appraisals.
Face.
Appraisals, right? So it's getting to the point where after negotiations, you're set and done, you've negotiated credits. And in this particular case, it was a 3-flat in Berwyn, and we got an amazing deal. Did get 10% below list. A lot of people say I talk fast, but see what happens when I speak really fast. I confuse the other realtor, and they're like, just shut up. Fine, we'll get to you at that price.
Because you annoy them. She annoys you. Carla Mina, where
tactic.
I will annoy the crap out of your good deal.
And
so
then
I
kept saying, okay, where's the appraisal? And then the appraisal came in where they were not considering the third unit as a third unit. It was legally zoned a 3-flat. And I'm not going to say too much because the realtor may be watching the show. But
too late. They can't take it back now.
Right? So then they did some crazy math, and the appraiser like just said, oh, we weren't counting square footage, what have you, right? So at the end of the day, I was like, okay, just, you know, punch me in. Like, let me in. Like, where are we so I can talk to the other realtor and get it done? typically a lot of realtors are going to say, let the attorneys handle it. And I said, well, okay, let the attorneys handle it. But first, when we did the negotiations at the forefront, because I am a listing agent and I get it when I'm on the listing side, I said, I want to make sure that during attorney review, we stipulate that we are going to adjust the price. Right. That's what was my saving grace. We're going to adjust the price to appraise fair market value. And also credits will not be, you know, affected. So if it gets adjusted by $50,000 minus that $10,000 I was getting for closing costs. And so we got to that point because the market is so it's so crazy. You almost want to protect you always want to protect your buyers and make sure that you have those stipulations. So when Lindsay said you got to get creative, you know, you get creative when you're aggressively buying and you're like, fine, I'll pay you because I know there's multiple offers. But you make sure you protect your client's best interest by using all sorts of addendums. And that's where Mo came in. He's like, well, I don't know. It doesn't matter that we have that document because technically, what were you saying?
Well, they could have. There was a couple different reasons they could have terminated, but luckily we did have that in the attorney review letter, so it put a little bit more pressure on him, and it got done. And then Carla just called and made sure they never got off the phone until they said yes.
I was like, it sounds they did agree. So again, there's a lot of checks and balances in real estate. So don't get like overwhelmed with the process. You know, there's no such thing as overpaying unless, of course, you're buying cash. And then, but then you could also say, I want an appraisal.
There's no such thing as overpaying. Is that
how are you overpaying when you're financing a loan? Are you guys, as a lender, are you going to approve a property that doesn't appraise out?
I think you fixed that at the end when you said, if you're buying cash. I just now processed that.
Oh, process slowly today.
She speaks
slowly.
Fast.
She does speak fast.
I go fast.
One of the things that I've seen people kind of waive to try to win a property, especially in condos, is either go as is, obviously, because as is doesn't mean you can't do an inspection. It just means that if you find something, you're going to take it subject to that stuff. And especially in a condo, not a lot's going to go wrong with your condo. I've even seen people waive inspections in condos that are like a one bed, one bath, and they bring, you know, Uncle Jimmy, the contractor, through and he says, it's okay. I would not suggest that in a single family home. There's just too much that can go wrong. I bought a house from family without an inspection, and I have quite a few headaches on my hands. But you can go as is sometimes because as is still gives you the opportunity to walk away if you find something wrong. But it's one less thing the seller has to worry about, so your offer becomes stronger.
Yeah, and for those people that are buying for the first time, they do an inspection. This is not like buying a brand new car where you find every little scratch and you're going to expect that to be fix before you move in. Seller doesn't have to do a lot of this stuff if they don't want to. They're willing to just walk away too. You know, so it's not like they owe you anything. However, when you get an inspection report and you see some things and dings on there that need to be touched up that you would like to be addressed, more times than none, you'll get a credit. Right? Mm-hmm. More times than none in that situation, the credit is usually far and above and beyond what it truly would cost to do it. I've seen it like that for the most part. So, for example, just a small hole in a roof that might cost $1,100 to fix. It's not uncommon for it to be a $2,500 credit. It's happened. So you might want to invite those things in some occasions as a bonus versus looking at them as a negative, something negative and forgetting your number one priority moving in again, which is maybe school district or whatever it was.
You hit that right. You're not going to get everything back, and there's no perfect home. Even new construction is going to have a punch list.
Right.
I tell people, if it's something you think the seller might do on the cheap, ask for a credit back and do it yourself once you move in. If it's as easy as changing it like a GFCI outlet or something that they can't do on the cheap, maybe ask for them to repair it. That's my rule of thumb.
But it's always as is, and I really dislike it when people go back and say, okay, but, you know, Lindsay, do you see that a lot? You're shaking your head. Like, right? Doesn't it get annoying? We bought it as is because we wanted to beat the competition, but now we want to go back and nickel and dime the seller. It's just, I don't know. I find it rude. Or you know what I hate the most is what agents practice, because, again, I do a lot of listings, is they'll submit the offer, be the highest and best, and it's a very juicy, like, hefty offer, and you're like, whoa, okay, we'll take it. But then they'll do the inspection and accept an as-is clause, but then go back and adjust your offer by $50,000 to $60,000. You're like, really? You just wasted my time because I took your offer because we thought you were willing and able, and now you're just like not willing and able. Because really, what's going on? So I always frown upon that when people are trying to get sneaky with it comes to like winning multiple bidding wars.
Right.
But gentlemen and lady, let's go back to our original commentary about like the timeline and the process for buying. I know that we were talking about like what makes a property unique, what makes it, you know, what drives people to buy these properties. Nick, you mentioned something about buying for views. I think that, you know, sellers also pay attention because when buyers are buying, they're looking at that specific something in your property that they really love, right? So some people are looking for hardwood floors only. Some people are looking for balconies in the condo category, or somebody in the single family may want that, that separate dining room. So always find that unique, you know, part of your property that's going to sell. But if a buyer is looking for views, obviously there's only specific areas in Chicago that, you know, make certain views, right? So we have to understand the different pricing. Do you kind of have an idea of, Lindsay, of what, you know, what we can get for, you know, like in the different areas, the best views in Chicago where one can find them?
Well, I guess that's, you know, in the eye of the beholder, because a view could be, are we talking a lake view? Are we talking you just want to be high up and see a bunch of buildings? I mean, river view, to me, my view of my backyard is just as good as staring at the lake. So it's kind of to be determined per the buyer. But yeah, I mean, pricing does come along with that. I think the higher the floor, generally you can expect to pay more in a high rise.
Every floor is another, like, let's say, for example, $10,000 per floor. It's like, oh, here we go.
And then you talk penthouse, like, woo.
Right. So when pricing, make sure that you understand the logistics that, you know, that follow this particular, you know, thing that you want, item or want that you want in your checklist. Obviously, a higher floor, a view, east facing in Chicago, it's very expensive. We have some really cool buildings in the city of Chicago, that 2800 North Diversity building that has an amazing view of the lake and Lincoln Park. I think by far my favorite building. Have you ever been in there?
Mm-hmm.
And Lincoln Park, right? And then there's is really close to the Gulf. Anyway, so, you know, just depend. It depends on where you're going to be shopping. Like you said, you know, your view of your backyard could be amazing.
It's very tranquil.
But understand that there's logistics with when it comes to parking, also pricing, but parking also in the city is something that's going to add more value to your property. And when shopping, if you have that in your list, that's something that's going to demand a little bit higher pricing. Do you agree, Mo?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking to a car guy who is renting
four
spots so I can fit my car.
I want a place with five parking spaces.
So what about the person that you got, those OCD people that want to have the perfect timing on everything? Right? They're like, when's the perfect time to buy? What about those that are just like, they've kind of packed it in and said, screw it, I'm just going to keep renting, because the best time to absolutely buy was probably somewhere around 2013 or 12 maybe, when the rates were at the absolute low, but the property still hadn't skyrocketed yet. So what about that person?
Well,
why don't they just, you know, forget it, I missed the boat, I missed the best deals, now I'm paying like top dollar essentially. Every market when it's stable is top dollar for the property and blah, blah, blah.
What because you're not a psychic and you missed that boat already, and it's come, it's gone, and that's it. And you're still going to be paying rent right now. Rent rates keep going up. So the rent rates in 2013, if you were a renter, are very different than now. So purchase prices have gone up, but so have your rent. So, you know, renting made sense when you could get a place that would have had a mortgage, taxes, assessments for $2,300 at $1,700. But right now, when you look at equal condos and it costs more to be a renter than it does to have a mortgage, taxes, assessments, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. So rents keep going up just like home prices are going up. So on the timing thing, I always tell people, you got to spend some time looking for homes. You know, when your rent is coming up, when you're about to re-sign a lease, don't wait till a month before you want to re-sign your lease to start looking for a home. Take a little bit more time than that. How long do you typically want your buyers to start looking?
If I could have it my way, it would be a month before. But yeah, 6 months could be kind of that sweet spot.
I think 6 months now, just because there's not a ton of inventory.
Right.
But yeah, because otherwise we're going crazy. Like, we have to buy something. I mean, remember, it's going to be 45 days to get it closed because of financing and all that jazz. But yeah, for sure.
Speaking of something you want your buyers to do, we got to come back to a question we asked you. What is it something you absolutely don't want your buyers to ever do to you?
Yeah, so my pet peeve is actually, we had just spent a good chunk of this topic, which I was going to say is inspection. Just chill out. Like, chill out. You don't need
let
to
it out.
Over. Let it out.
This is exactly what we're looking for.
Like,
get her all upset.
So I know you want all of the smoke detectors replaced, but mm-hmm. anything under like $100 or $250, just like leave it off. Like, yes, it all adds up, but that could be a nice closing gift. I could get you some new smoke detectors. We don't need to freak out about that. I think buyers, first-time home buyers, they go nuts over the little things. And
that's the peeve you would do away
yeah,
with.
Yeah, just chill you know what? Out.
The nitro question has been answered.
Great.
That's a question. Good peeve.
He was actually nice with you. Like, it was kind of like a whatever one, right? It was a, wow, you're being
nice
to Lindsay.
Well, you know, she's new and I've just met her. But next time she comes on, we'll give her a much more difficult nitro question. Don't you worry.
I conditioned her. I was like, it's probably going to be pretty bad. And then you made it really nice.
I don't know. Someone said something confusing. About embarrassing moments. And I was
I can't use the same question over and over again. I mean, I got to.
Yeah, you, know, you got to up your game.
It's. Really? How about you do the nitro questions from now on?
No, I do enough.
You really? Really? You intro the show and then you walk away lately. You're on your phone. You're doing whatever you're doing. You're
Are
reading
you
Facebook
complaining
messages.
About me? I'm not reading Facebook
How
messages.
How dare you
I'm
criticize my nitro questions?
I'm multitasking. I'm not. Okay, let's move on. Anyway, we have a question, actually. Somebody sent this to us. Going back to values and how we assess values on a property and how it affects values. Because, you know, a lot of people buy properties and then they start making modifications. Like I recently had a buyer ask me, so what if we turn in this, you know, third bedroom into a master bathroom? And I was like, you're going to, lower the value. So make sure you put it back when you're done using the property and you go back on the market because you always have to buy and think about the resale. Having said that, the question is a bathtub really an added value to a home? Seems like a walk-in fancy shower. Seems like walk-in fancy showers are on the rise these days. What are your thoughts on that? Mo, let me start with Mo, Lindsay, just because I know you started work. You're rehabbing your current home, correct?
I am.
So what did you decide to do?
I have more than one bathroom, so I'm going to have
God. Excuse me.
I'm
going to
have some walk-ins, some tubs, some more tubs. I think if you have one, I think a tub makes some sense, and I'll tell you why. Because people typically who are buying a place that has one bathroom might be having their first kid or planning on having a kid. They're young professionals. And babies – I don't have a baby, but babies typically want –
But you have a dog. In a shower? You can wash your dog.
He's 130 pounds, so
okay.
He's not going
Forget
in a bath.
Forget it.
But I would say if you have one, a tub makes sense. But if you have multiple, yes, people love having a nice big walk-in shower with, you know, a shower head coming out of the ceiling and multiple body sprays. I like taking baths. I'm a guy who takes baths. I take Epsom salt baths, so. I need at least one tub.
Did he say he takes bath?
I did.
Did you even catch that, Nick? He's gone.
Yeah, I was waiting for grief from him.
What I want to know is do you or do you not have an espresso machine in your master bathroom?
I don't drink coffee.
You do not have a nice home then. we had somebody on a show and they told us they did a lot of luxury real estate and they said that they've seen espresso machines in the bathrooms.
That's fancy.
I'm like, wow, that's a whole nother... That and a heated toilet seat. That's it. You own the world.
You're so weird in life. Does anyone ever tell you that?
I am weird for the 45 minutes that we... And look at that.
Wait, can I have
We
Sheena,
are almost done with the 45
minutes.
I got to
mess with Mo because we have people thinking he's dreamy. He's got dreamy eyes and all that stuff. From what I have learned from my brother in buying a house and fixing one, be patient. The right one will come along. Thanks for making me wait for the right one, bro.
Bruh.
That's so sweet. Oh, did I read that wrong?
Bruh.
I love it. Tons of love for you out there.
My sister's very sweet. I can't
And compromise. Not everything is going to be exactly what you wanted to initially, but you can fix it.
That's all about life. It's compromise. Mm-hmm. Find something that you want and compromise.
Shout out to my sister for taking time off to listen. She's a veterinarian, so she's giving shots to doggies. And
so she right now is risking the life of a cat somewhere, and she's watching you instead?
Yeah, watching us.
That's just horrible.
Look how important we are.
You are so important.
You are so important. All right, well, we're wrapping this up, and I just want to go again. What is the one piece of advice you will give to those who might be looking to buy a home in 2018? I feel like I can't improvise anymore. Nico has us on like a tight, like...
I don't pay attention to that. This thing right here?
Nico!
Bro, I never read it.
But this is actually a good question. So I love you, Nico. I want you to know, Nico, that I do appreciate you. and I miss you, and my privileges have been taken.
You've been cut off from the marketing department at Island.
I'm not very happy, but
you're
thank
like
you.
That tenant. You're like that guest that comes over and never goes home. I said you could sleep over a night or two. You can't stay here for life without paying rent.
I will get them back. I don't care. Ah! You and I, Juan. Anyway, what piece of advice would you give somebody going forward in 2018, Lindsay? That one thing you would say, hey, when you start shopping in 2018, I want you to consider that and think about me.
I would say that just to cater to maybe a millennial crowd, perhaps, that nothing has to be permanent and you do want to earn equity in a home or a condo and you can always have the option to rent it out. That is not as big of a deal as you might think it is.
Look at that. Speaking that language, right? Mobility.
How about you, Mo?
Same. I mean, don't not buy because you feel as though it's going to get you stuck. It's not going to make you stuck. It's going to give you more freedom. It's going to build more wealth. And truly, it does not make sense to be a renter anymore. So start early enough so it's not the last 30 days leading to the end of your lease. Start 6 months, 5 months out. But buy. Renting makes no sense anymore.
Carl Amino. Bit of advice.
I was going to ask you the question.
I close the show out.
I'm going to close the show out. I already have new rules here. See, close, Carla closes out. Anyway, I have advice for sellers. Anyone looking to bring the property back on the market January or December, I always say take photos early on, right? Because right now it's so pretty with the leaves. It is so cute. So if you're going to put the property on the market later on when it's snowing and not a lot of people like snow, including me, I would say do your photography. Call your favorite realtor and get those photos shot now so that you can get that property on the market and you have really cool photos to showcase your exterior of the home. As far as buyers, it's never the wrong time. Of course, and you're thinking because we're salespeople and we're out there in the trenches and we're selling real estate. But again, it's the best thing to do with respect to building wealth and building a portfolio.
It's never the wrong time to make an investment. It's a lot like health. It's never a wrong time to start eating and dieting healthy, right? It's just not. It's never a wrong time to start making money.
And I always say this to my investor clients, right? Fourth quarter is the best time for acquisition, slow markets, maybe motivated sellers. You could get something for a good deal and then fix it, bring it back in the market back in the spring when all your buyers are buying who are going to be financing and can pay a premium because they're not buying cash like you are.
My bit of advice for everybody is find yourself a good agent and find yourself a good team to work with so that the process could be a little bit less painful than it probably will be. It's a nerve-wracking experience when you take the whole process in the totality of, you're taking out big debt, you're buying a property that seems like it's permanent. I mean, there's a lot of feelings that go through a first-time home buyer's stomach. But that could be simplified with a good agent. How do you find a good agent? Or loan officer. You send in your email to info@marketoverdrive.com or hit us up on Facebook. We are at Facebook.com/marketoverdrive or Twitter@marketoverdrive. And of course, you can follow us on our podcast at WGN.
And Lindsay.
We good now.
Lindsay, come on. You should have said Network. That. Own that. Call Lindsay.
Hey, and this show obviously will be cataloged on our podcast at Market Overdrive. At YouTube on Market Overdrive, and last but not least, it'll be on the podcast, the WGN Radio Family Podcast. So, with that being said, thank you, Lindsay, for being our guest today. Mo, we will see you again in about 14 more days or so.
Seven
more days or so. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next Thursday at 2 o'clock.